About 1:30. Welcome. Thank you for coming and listening to me talk about Workflow 4.5. I was talking to some folks earlier. I'm looking at the schedule and realized that twice today I'm up against Scott Guthrie. But fortunately, you're here. And I shouldn't mention that Scott's talking because I don't want anybody to go. He's talking about that cloud stuff. We're going to talk about Windows Workflow 4.5, what's coming, some of the big features and some of the smaller features. My name is Matt. I answer to all sorts of things, but it is Matt. And you can follow me on Twitter if you want. Excuse me. I'm a consultant on lots of connected systems and web technologies, but I also do videos for Pluralsight. We're based in the States. We do video training available online. I talked to a couple of people that already stopped by the booth here. So we've got a booth over with the vendors, and we've got cards there you can pick up for a free subscription, or you can stop by up here and grab one or ask me about it. But video training on everything Microsoft, and now expanding beyond that and covering things like RavenDB and SVN and things like that. So that's what I do, and here's what we're going to talk about. For this session, we're just going to talk about what's new coming in Workflow 4.5. Now, I'm using a developer preview. We'll put that out there right now. Things will probably not go perfectly. Mostly the demo stuff seems to work just fine. Yesterday when I did this in Belgium, not so much. One of the features started complaining about XAML this, and the compiler was failing, and build tasks. And so I think I've mitigated that to some extent today. Well, hopefully it won't have any issues, but it is a developer preview. But most of the features are pretty close to where they're at. Some of them are mostly refinements and designer enhancements. So you should see what's pretty close to the final product, I think. Now, some of the features are going to be pretty big, things you've been hoping for, waiting for, and some of them are going to be smaller things that at first glance you look at and say, that's pretty minor. You know, why are we talking about that? But if you've worked with Windows Workflow and you've built workflows, sat at your desk and actually building them, some of those really small features you're going to be very thankful for, right? Just because the sheer kind of volume of times that you do those tasks will kind of make those things pay off. And a lot of those features have really been driven by customer feedback, right? People who have been using Workflow version 4 and saying, I hate that I have to do this, or I hate it that you make this work this way. Please fix this. So that's where a lot of these changes have come from. So the first one, kind of get it out of the way, right? This is kind of an important thing for people that do C#. So before I dive in, how many people have done Windows Workflow development or used it in the past? And of those people with your hands up, how many of you have used Workflow 4? Okay, a mix. All right. So for those of you that haven't, in Workflow version 4, when you created a new workflow project, we have these things called expressions where you can write little snippets of code. And even if you created a C# project, you got to write VB in those expressions. See how I turned that? You got to write VB. Aren't you lucky? And it wasn't too bad. There was maybe, 18 or so different keywords. You know, instead of null, we have to use nothing. We get into not equals, and you had to say, is not nothing. It's a change, and it really aggravates lots of people. And so they fix that. Now, let me just pull up. We'll get a new project started here for our demos. I'm going to try and make sure I don't collapse the table here. And I am going to use a console app just because it is demo. So we'll create a new application here, and I'm going to make a flowchart. Workflow. Now, the flowchart was introduced in Workflow version 4 as a new control flow activity. It gives you a slightly different way to control the flow of your application. And it has the standard decision shapes or a switch to choose your path. Now, let's put some arguments here. I'm going to define an argument for this. We'll call it names. And I'm going to make that a list of strings. So I'm going to browse for types, find my list of T. Strings. We've got an in argument to our workflow that's going to allow somebody to come in and pass in this list of strings. Oh, I created an additional argument. I'm just a little too click happy. For those of you who have used workflow, how do I get rid of that in workflow 4? I have to hit the delete key. How do you know that? I had to figure it out, right? There's no delete button. There's nothing there. In workflow 4, you just had to figure out that you had to hit the delete key to get rid of that thing. Right? Kind of annoying for a lot of people. So minor thing, but if you right-click now, you actually get a context menu. Right? You didn't even get that in workflow 4. You would right-click, nothing. You would double-click. It would just let you edit it. You just had to figure out, oh, it's the delete key. Sort of common sense. But you'd hope to not have to just figure that stuff out. So minor change, hopefully a big difference. All right, so we have this list of names. And if we look at the decision, we can see over here that the condition, it says enter a C-sharp expression. I'm going to pop up the editor here. Ah, see? This is one of those developer preview things. I expected this to happen in Belgium, and it didn't. I was all set to explain in Belgium, oh, this is a developer preview thing, and then it just worked. So this may or may not work for you. So we can do names not equal to null, right? Finally, some C-sharp that we can use. And if we go over here, we see a nice little pop-up on the screen that shows us its names not equal null. And that's kind of nice, but really, names is not nothing, names is not equal null. That's not very exciting for C-sharp. But I'm happier about things like this, where I can say from n in names, where n dot length greater than 3, select n, first or default does not equal null. Now let's see. Oh, nope, still doing it. All right. That, to me, is much more impressive that I can write these lambda expressions in here, have those interpreted correctly as C-sharp. I don't have to use the VB syntax. Because frankly, I could get used to is not nothing, but I pound my head against the wall every time I have to try and write a lambda expression or something in VB. So having the C-sharp support is kind of a big deal. Now, one of the things to keep in mind with that is if you have an existing project, workflow project, and it's C-sharp, and you open it in Visual Studio 11, it will retain those original settings. Because all that VB that you wrote isn't going to work with the C-sharp expression compiler. Right? So when you upgrade those, it will retain those settings. It'll still use the VB expressions, and that stuff will just work for you. All right. So I've got to connect this thing up here. All right. Grab that handle, maybe drag it down. Okay, connected. Good. Now it's happy. I've got a connection there, and I've got my decision. So we've got some C-sharp. That's kind of nice. This is where we get into all these kind of smaller changes that are hopefully going to have a big impact on your development experience as you're writing these. So a lot of these are designer enhancements, things they've updated in the core designers that go across activities, some of the particular designers. We've got some new activities that, you know, frankly, aren't going to jump out at most people. There's no, you know, crazy database activity, no Windows Azure activities, you know, nothing kind of huge. But they can make a really big impact if you think about how you'll use them. So we'll talk about those. And then a lot of it is around, as you start working with workflows, and we do demos, we show things off, and you have these nice small workflows with 15 or 20 activities. When you start building real workflows, you're going to have 50, 100 activities. You're going to have a workflow that's calling out and using a bunch of activities and composing those things together. And so making sense of that, either as a developer or as maybe a business analyst or a business person you're trying to show this to, can be challenging. And so we'll look at some of the enhancements they've added for making things better both for the developer as well as for the business person that might be looking at that. All right, so let's start off small. You know, I had to connect my start there to my decision, and those handles aren't all that easy to grab, even with my glasses on. So a couple of nice things they did is I can take my activity now, my right line, and if I come close, you'll see I get these little arrows on either side of this thing. So now if I go and connect that, it wires it up for me, it connects it, so I don't have to draw those little lines. So we'll drag another one over here. I'll just say there are names. Oops, that was my false. So that would be there are not names. So we can drag those things and have them connect, but we can also decide later that, oh gosh, you know what? First of all, maybe I'm one of those people that really needs it to go exactly the right way. I can fix it up. But what happens today if I decide I need an additional step in there? Well, then I've got to go and disconnect this thing, add that step in, reconnect everything. Well, now with the designers, you just drag it onto the connection, and again, they'll do that for you. Clearly, they don't line the lines up like I would want to, but they get it there. So you can drop it in and connect it. You can also drop it on an existing connection, and it will add it in and reconnect everything for you. Small changes, but hopefully a big impact. We'll get something in there. All right. So we've got a couple activities here. We can run this thing right now, but it won't be very interesting. So let's go out and create an activity. Right, most of the time you have a workflow. You're not going to just use these out-of-the-box activities. Oops. So we'll add a new item. Go to workflow and pick activity. Call this the try to divide activity. Oops, not CS, XAML. So I have a new activity here. I'll add a try catch in here as my root. I'm going to try and do some work. And I'll put a write line in there, because that's what I do in a demo. So we'll say we're trying. Okay, now I should probably put something more than just a write line in that try. But what did I have to do before if I wanted to put some more activities in the try? The try happens to be an activity that has a body. A body property of type activity. Well, I just populated that with my activity, and it can only hold one activity. So the typical pattern would be, oh, if I want to have more than one thing happen in there, I would first put a sequence in and then put my activities in. Well, I got ahead of myself, and I didn't put the sequence in. So normally in workflow 4, I'd have to cut this, put a sequence in, paste it back in. Today, I can just take another activity, drag it near there, and you should see the gray bars appearing right above and below. Notice if I go on those, right, it gives me the opportunity to drop that in there, and it automatically wrapped it in this sequence. So we'll drag this up in here, kind of collapse that, and you can see that now my try has a sequence, has those other things in there. So this is one of those enhancements just to the core designers that for an activity that's presenting a single child activity, if you try to drop another item in before or after, they'll automatically make that one child activity a sequence and kind of rearrange things so that you get the structure that you want. Small change, big impact, hopefully. But this activity I dragged in is called the no persist scope. In Windows Workflow, we have this notion that as a workflow is running, its state can be saved out to a durable store. Out of the box, that's SQL Server. It's a great feature. It allows us to save off our state and come back and resume the workflow later. It's one of the things that really makes workflow as powerful as it is. But there are times in your workflow where you don't want to save your state. Right? Maybe you have an in-scope variable that's a really big object graph, and you don't want to save state at that particular time. Or you're in the middle of a longer operation. You're doing something, and you don't want to have the state persisted out at that point. You don't want to be able to have that thing taken out of memory. You had the ability to do that in Workflow 4, but you had to use the APIs. So you had to write a custom activity. You had to call out to the APIs and say, you know what, start right now this no persist scope, and then later you had to call back and indicate that you wanted to end it. Right, so they've added an activity now to make that simpler for you to just declare, for this section of the workflow, you cannot persist. Right. Don't save out my state for this duration because what I'm doing is going to get interrupted or messed up if you save state for me. Right. All right. So what I want to do now is I'm going to allow somebody to call this thing, and we're going to allow them to pass in a divisor, and we're going to do some poor programming practice here because I'm not going to check it. All right, so they're going to pass in some int, and then I'm going to just put in a temp value here, make that an in. Oh, actually, see, I did it again. I don't want that. I'm going to right-click and delete it. I want that to be a variable. So it's an int in that sequence. So what I'm going to do then is just allow somebody to pass in that value, and we'll set temp value equals to, 15 divided by divisor. Now, since I'm not checking that, what might happen? Old school kind of exceptions, right? What if they pass in zero? Nobody would do that. But we'll assume they might. There we go. So we've got a divide by zero exception here that could happen. So I'm going to try and catch that. Now, I could handle it here. I could log it. I could do different things. But this is an activity, right? This is supposed to be a reusable component that somebody can put in their workflow. And so I could catch it. I could also then throw it if I wanted to, or I could just let the whole thing bubble up. But what I want to do here is simply provide the client a message, right, or provide the client the ability to react when an error happens. For a message, I could simply have an out argument of string. I could just pass that back. But I want to go a step further. I don't just want to give them back a string. I actually want to call back to the caller here and let them execute some code, let them run some activities. So in .NET, that would essentially be a callback. I would use a delegate. Well, in workflow 4, they introduced the notion of delegates, essentially. We have activity actions and activity funcs. They map up very closely with the action and func delegates in .NET. And so what that's going to allow me to do, if I go to the arguments here, we'll call this exception action. I'm going to make that a property as opposed to an in or an out. And when I browse for the type, I'll choose activity action. And you can see there are a variety of different signatures here, essentially to allow me to have a different number of parameters in this callback or this delegate. We have the same thing in .NET, right? We have the action delegate that has 1 to 16, I think, different typed parameters. So I want to be able to say, I want you to be able to pass me an activity action of T, where T is a string. So you're going to be able to pass into me a delegate, essentially, that's going to accept a string parameter, and then you can take that string and work on it. So when we catch the exception, I'm going to drag another new activity on here called invoke delegate. So this was introduced now, or is coming in 4.5, that enables me to take advantage of this. In workflow 4, they had activity actions and activity funcs, but you had to write all this stuff yourself. Right? It had to be custom activities, custom designers, and it wasn't really the most pleasant thing to try and get this hooked up. So now they've enabled this callback mechanism quite simply with this activity and these abilities. So I can say, all right, well, at this point in my activity, I want to invoke that delegate. I want to invoke that callback that somebody gave me. And we go to the delegate arguments. We can see it already knows there's one in there. So I'm going to take that exception and use the message as the string argument back to the caller. So we've got our activity here. We've got the automatic sequence wrap that happened. We saw the no persist scope that we can use. Doesn't really do a whole lot of good for my write line, but lots of use cases where you could use that. And now we've got this action defined on our activity, or this callback that somebody can give us when they use this. So let's build and see what I've broken. Okay, that succeeded. So if I go back here now, I should have my new activity up here. Drag that into the workflow. And if I look over here in the properties, I have the divisor property. I'll set that to 0. And I have the exception action, which you'll notice is not an expression. It shows up there, but it doesn't really let me set it over there. Because I want to go onto the activity and double click. And now notice it says, oh, all right, well, here is your try divide activity. And as a delegate, so drop an activity in here. Pull the right line in, and notice that now it's created that argument. It says, oh, okay, here's your callback, or this is your delegate, your action that we're going to call. It takes a string, and this is the name of that string parameter. So when we invoke this thing, that's a parameter you're going to get. And we can, of course, since it's just a variable, we could change that around. And then we can reference that. We could say an error happened in our custom activity. Oops. Then we can use that message parameter. So now this is the consumer of my activity, the main workflow, getting a chance to react or getting called back for certain scenarios. All right. So before we run that, does anybody see any problems with my workflow? Because right now, if I build succeeds, no errors on the designer, I should be good, right? Oh, how do I get to that activity? I don't. Right? It's not connected to anything. That should be a problem, shouldn't it? In fact, it is a problem, and it has been a problem since workflow 4. I can't tell you how many times I've built a flow chart and forgot to connect something. And if, you know, as your flow chart gets really busy, it's easy to lose those connections. So right now, I want this to be an error, but it's technically not. So one of the new features in workflow 4.5 is that for my flow chart, I can come down here in the property grid and check this box to validate unconnected nodes. Backwards compatibility reasons and kind of feature parity. They didn't want to just turn this on by default and start causing problems for people who maybe wouldn't use it. But as soon as I turn it on, I get that error glyph up in the top right that tells me, quite clearly, right? All nodes must be connected when you have this property set to true. Okay. Now, for those of you that use workflow 4, let me save that. What would happen when I build if I had a validation error? Runtime error, right? Not a build error. Even when you had validation errors like this in workflow 4, it would still build successfully, which right here might not be a problem because I can see that it's a problem, but on a build server, or if I have 10 different activities in here where I don't have them open, right, there's no visual indicator, then I might miss that. Did you have a question?
It's especially useful for very large workflows.
Yes.
It
doesn't, but if you go and, that's a good point, and then when you go and look at that, it does tell you that all the nodes must be connected, but you're right, it doesn't tell you which ones are not connected. Which is good feedback since we're in the developer preview to tell the team, hey, what would be really useful is for you to tell me which nodes aren't connected. Yep. All right. So two things there. One, with the flow chart, we have this free form. We can now indicate that we want to get validation errors if things aren't connected, which could be improved. And two, that if we have validation errors in a workflow, the build fails. Right. Which, again, is critical as you think about building on a build server or when you have lots of activities or large activities, being able to know that. Now, I could drag and connect these things together, but I'm going to use my new feature and have it auto-connect because I think that's a lot easier. All right, so my condition up here was names where length is greater than 3, select N. Okay, so we're going to go run this. We'll pass in a new dictionary of string object. We'll give it names, and that'll be a new list of strings. And we will put in a list that doesn't have Anything with three. Oh, need one more of the, oops, one more of those. There we go. So as we run our workflow now, we should get into the decision. It's going to look at our collection, see that we don't have any items that have a length greater than three. It should go down the false path here. We should get that right line. Then it's going to call our activity. We're passing in zero, so that exception should kick in. And we should get into our catch. And the catch then should call back out to our delegate for us to respond. And it did. And here we can see the text, right, that we wrote in the workflow to write out that error message. So those activity actions and the activity funcs are really, really useful as you're building up these custom activities or these units of work that you want to be able to bring into your workflows. Right? All sorts of use cases where we can use those delegates. Right? The activity actions obviously allow the activity to pass parameters and have you act on them. The activity funcs allow you to pass data from the activity back out, but also allow the parent workflow or the parent activity to provide a result. Right, so that's the difference between the actions and the funcs, is that the funcs actually have a return type. Right, so that the activity could call out to the workflow, for example, and say, you know what, here's a special case. I'm about to log this particular error. What kind of severity do you want it to have? Right, or I'm about to send an email. Here's a delegate, a callback for you to provide me an attachment or to provide me, you know, some piece of data that I can use in this activity. So enabling those and making it so that they're much easier for you to use is a big deal for 4 or 5. All right. So we've seen some of these designer enhancements. I'll run through a couple of real quick ones now. Our workflow is starting to get a little bigger. If I move this guy off the screen just to make it seem bigger. So minor thing, but now we have panning. Right, so I click the little pan handle, I guess, the pan handle down here, and now I can drag the workflow around to get what I want on the screen. Now, obviously, while you're in that mode, that's all you can do. But the other thing I can do is, let's say this guy is way over here too. One of those frustrating things with workflow in version 4, I couldn't select more than one activity. Right. Now I can grab both of those things and move them back over here. And you can do the multi-select that way. So we've got panning, you've got multi-select, the ability to get around the workflow a little bit better. A couple other things that help here. What about this outline? We've got an example here in the flow chart. I have no idea what happens right now inside that activity. On two levels, really. One, I don't really know what the activity does internally, and that's okay. Right? To me, that's okay. It's a black box. It's supposed to be that way. But in my workflow, I have activities in there. This is part of my workflow, and I can't see it from the design surface. Right? And so it can be kind of hard to make sense of the structure, especially in these flow charts when lots of things get collapsed like this. And so they've added a new view here called the document outline. And you'll notice it keeps in check or keeps track of where we are, but it also allows me to drill down into these things. And if I click on that right line, it takes me right into it. And so I can get a different view of my activity tree as a tree view, right, and drill down in and find a particular activity that I want and just by clicking on it, navigate into it. So I don't have to kind of click around and dig through, jump back and forth with the breadcrumbs to go find those things. Now, as you get even bigger workflows, what might be better is I want to do find. Now, believe it or not, find didn't work all that well in Visual Studio 4 or Visual Studio 10 with Workflow 4. Some of these things, especially if you haven't used it, you may be scratching your head and saying, really? I couldn't select multiple things? Really, I couldn't do a find? No, you couldn't. And so they've had to integrate some of these features as they've gone. So let's say we want to look for... let's see, if we go into our try, let's go for Well, let's search for right line. And you can see when we find next, it highlights it in here. Right? It shows me that it found it in the property display name. So when you do a regular old find, it looks at the activities, it looks at their properties, their display name, basically all the kinds of things you would think about being in the designer. It will look at those things. As we go find next, we'll see another one there. We type in error. Right. Notice that it comes down, it finds the right line, it says it found it in the property text. But if I search for state, it doesn't find it. Right? There isn't anything with a property or anything else called state. But if I do shift control F or find in files and look for state, now I get a ton because our XAML has all sorts of references to the workflow view state. Right? So find, we'll kind of go over the tree and find you the things that you would expect, maybe properties and things like that, and expressions. The find in files will actually look at the XAML itself instead of the model. All right, so it will go look at the XML and find things in there. So you can use those two things to find what you're looking for. Again, if I go and find the that view state on the try catch and I click it, it'll take me right to that particular activity. So even though it found it in the XAML, it's smart enough to be able to show it to me in the designer. Oh, say that one more time. Is it the...
Can this also be combined with multiple selects, like all activities in which you find this?
Oh, good question. So can I multi-select those things when I do the find? I don't believe so yet, but honest, I didn't try that. Let's look. So you want to grab maybe the try and the... Where's another one? No, because it won't let you multi-select down here. Yeah. No, that would be kind of nice, wouldn't it? Find all the activities where this is true and select them so I can delete them all or do something to all of them. Right. Yep. All right. All right, so last things here is we're talking about making sense. We've got the document outline and the searching and the panning that we can do. The last thing is, for a developer, this might make sense, right? And we go look at this, and hopefully when you look at the decision and you see that link statement, if you're working with devs and they're using link, hopefully you can understand what they're writing. But what about if I show that decision to a business user? They're going to see one of two things. They're either going to see decision, which isn't very helpful, or they're going to see that link statement, which probably is even less helpful for somebody who's not a developer trying to make sense of this. So believe it or not, before we couldn't do anything with this decision or the flow switch, and now we can go in and say... something like this, all right, check if longer than three. So very simple, makes it so we can actually tell what that decision is doing. But beyond that, we can also go up to an activity and add an annotation. So essentially we can comment now or document our workflows with these annotations or these comments in here. So I can put that on an activity. I could go down to this activity. We'll add another one here. For delegates, oops. And you can see that we can notice that those are there. We can also go and put them on an argument, so we can comment our arguments as well. Those will show up down in here. But on the workflow surface, we also have the ability with the annotations to show all. Let me close the arguments. And you might notice now that they show up in line in the designer. So if you're going to print this out, if you're going to save it, if you're going to share it with somebody, and they don't have the designer, right, and they're not going to be able to mouse over that little post-it note, it can show up right in line with the activity designer so they can see those comments on the activities to understand what those things are supposed to be doing. And you can do that individually as well. So you can go in and kind of unpin those things or pin them individually if you want that to show up. So you can decide what comments you actually want to show up. Comments for workflows. Again, something we probably wish was there from the start. All right, I think that's enough of the small changes. So just to kind of review, we've got a lot of things around just getting around in your workflow. Document outline, panning, searching, with the finds, the multi-select. We've got for the authoring, right, all these new features around, you know, drop to connect, drop in the middle to reconnect everything. You have the ability to auto-generate that sequence when you need to add additional activities. And finally, validation for those disconnected nodes, but also the validation fails the build. And then we have all the display name updates, the annotations and things like that to really help you make sense of the workflow itself. And I think out of all that, most of those are really nice and day-to-day. I'm going to like using them. But that invoke delegate to me is huge. Right? Really enabling people to take advantage of that feature of using delegate, the delegate pattern in their workflows is going to enable all sorts of really cool activities without requiring you to go out and write a bunch of your own designer code and your own activity code. So we had a handful of people that were using Workflow 4. How many of you are using state machines on Workflow 4? Well, I saw somebody with their hand up, and then I said Workflow 4, and he took it down. This is one of those things that, you know, if you ask the wrong people, they get really grumpy. Because we had state machines in Workflow 3. It was great. We could have states, and we could transition, and it was awesome. And then Workflow 4 came out, and there was no state machine. And people got really upset, and lots of people are still on Workflow 3 because they have a big investment in a state machine, and it's the right model for their workflow. And so today, actually, as of, 9-10 months ago, they introduced state machine on Workflow 4. In order to get it, you have to apply the .NET Framework 4 Platform Update 1. It's a nice mouthful. Fortunately, it's released, so it's not, you know, .NET Framework 4 Platform Update 1, CTP3, or it is just the platform update. So there's two pieces to that. There's a runtime piece, and there's a tools piece for Visual Studio, so that you get all the designer support for the state machines. What that means is if you build a state machine with that update and you go to deploy it on the server also has to have that runtime piece out there. You can't just deploy it onto Workflow 4 or .NET 4. Has to be on .NET 4 Platform Update 1. And so when you install that, you get a whole different target platform in your Visual Studio that you need to change your project to, and that's it's there. It works. A couple extra hoops to jump through. In 4.5, it's just there. Right? It's in the box. It's part of the framework. No additional steps. And they made a couple of nice enhancements in terms of the designer and the way that it works. So since we've only got a few people that have used that, I'll run through that real quick. So let's go add a new activity, and we'll call it guessing here. And so now if I go to my toolbox and look, I've got my state machine. So I've got the state machine activity itself. Looks a lot like a flowchart, doesn't it? It's nice to see Microsoft reusing some of their components. They've reused the designer models here. And I have a state. We'll call this guess number. And I'm going to add another state, which is the final state. Right? So this, basically, if I double-click that, nothing happens. Right? I have the ability to kind of set up, oh, when you enter the final state, or essentially you're about done, I can do something here to kind of clean up or finalize. But otherwise, it's really a marker for this thing to indicate that it's done. Right? With a flow chart, it's very easy because you get to the end of your lines and you're done. Right? If there's no more connections, you're done. With a sequence, it's very easy. When you get to the last activity, you're done. With a state machine, though, we can move all over and we can go between states. So this is a way to signal that when you move to this state, the workflow is actually done. So let's set up a couple of variables here. So we'll have a variable for target number to guess. We'll make that an int. And we'll create one for current guess, and that'll be an int. And since we're going to get it from the console, we'll make a current guess string, and that'll be a string. So if I go into this state, you'll notice that it has an entry and an exit. Right? This is what I want to happen when I enter the state every time. These are some steps I want to take every time I exit the state. So I'm going to grab an if up here. Yeah, and we'll just say, well, if the target number equals 0. Anybody see what I did there? So all these things are scoped to the final state, which doesn't really help me. Unfortunately, I haven't seen any improvements that will tell me what I did there when you can't find those. But now that should be, there we go, one transition. So target, didn't die yet. Save. So if target number equals 0, we haven't created a target number yet, then let's go out and assign. Isn't it great working with the early bits? So we'll say target number, new random, next, and we'll do 1 to 100. So we'll put that in there so that when we enter this state, if we don't already have a target number, we'll create one. And then we've got the exit here. Now, I don't currently have any transitions defined. Let's go back to the state machine. So I can do the same kind of connection here to the final state. Notice I get a transition. We'll name that. We'll call that correct guess because that'll get us to the final state. And so if I double-click on the transition, this is my link from one state to another. How do I transition? Now, step one is I need some sort of a trigger. Right? What activities or what events here are going to cause this transition to begin? Now, for those of you that worked with Workflow 3, for state machines or for listen activities, for those sorts of things, you had some requirements here. These had to be special activities. Right? They had to have a particular interface. And so you could use a delay or WCF receive or custom activity or one of the local communication activities. Now, there were about three things out of the box plus your own custom activities that you could use here. In Workflow 4 and carried over into 4.5, a trigger like this can be any activity. Right? I could put a write line in here. So what happens is, as this transition starts, and any transitions I have on the state, all the triggers are going to begin executing. Whatever activities are there. Whichever one finishes first is the transition then that will be followed. So if I have one that maybe has a trigger where I'm waiting for input from the user or I'm waiting for that WCF call, I might have another transition where the trigger is a delay. Right? So that I can say, well, look, I'm waiting for them to call, and if that happens, great, we'll follow this transition and maybe look at the conditions and maybe change state. But if they don't ever call or they don't call in this amount of time, then I have a different transition to follow. Right? A different trigger event is going to fire, and I'm going to do different things. So for my trigger activity, I'm going to come out here, and I want to invoke a delegate. Oh, come on, find it. Now I've done it. Oh, I found it. Is that it? It looks like it. Oh, console color. That's not what I want. System. I'm typing too fast. Oh, come on. I'm typing it correctly. I'm going to take that. That'll work. Okay, so we want to do a read line, and we're going to take the result then and put it into the current guest string. And for fun, we'll say we want to run that asynchronously. Why not? It's a read line. Now, I've got my invoke method. I haven't prompted anybody yet, so I'm going to go back and take advantage of one of those other new features. So I'm going to drag my write line in before that, wrap it in a sequence. See? You'll use it all the time. So enter your guess. We're going to take that guess in here. All right, and then once we've pulled it in, now that we're in a sequence, we can throw an assign in there. Current guess equals int parse. Current guess string. Yes, I should check that, and I should try parse, but now we have that. So we have this transition now. We've triggered it, right? When the read line completes and we've assigned that, when that batch of work is done, that trigger will be considered complete and will then check these conditions to go into this transition. So now on this condition, I could say, well, if the current guess is greater than the target number, right? Oops, that's not what I want. I want not equal. Where are we going here? No, final state. We want equal. If they guessed it, right? Then I simply want to tell them, hey, good job. Right? You got it correct. And then we'll transition to the final state. Right? So when you guess the right number, we want to go in and have you transition to the final state, the game is over. So if we look at our state machine, right, we have this nice flow through here. But I also have the notion in a state machine of a transition back to the current state. The event happened, or the trigger happened, I read the line, I got the guess, it's not correct. Right. Well, I want to prompt you again. Right. So I want to transition back to this same state, but what I don't want to do is redo, that's my entry if I go to the transition here. Right. I don't want to redo all of this stuff, I don't want to redefine the trigger over again because it's the exact same thing. And so what I want to be able to do is take that trigger, we'll just collapse our sequence there, and there's our transition to the correct guess, and I want to add a shared trigger transition. Now this is one of the things that they added in 4.5, or they're adding in 4.5, I should say. It's not that the ability to have the shared triggers is new, but it's kind of like that deleting an argument thing. You just had to know that on the state machine designer, if you grab the exact right point on the connection, and you drag it to the right point on the state, it would do a self-transition. It's intuitive, you know, drag this from here to here. And so they finally just surfaced this up where I can say, no, look, I want a shared trigger transaction. When that event happens, right, I want to transition to guess number. Now, there it is, hiding in there. I'm not going to mess with it because it will probably break. So let's go to our new transition. So we have the trigger. The designer actually works really well. It shows me that new trigger. So here, of course, the condition is going to be that current guess does not equal target number. And then we can simply go in and let the person know. All right, if current guess is lower, then we'll go do our write line. All right. So we'll say higher, come over here, we'll paste that activity. Lower. So we've got a state. Within that state, we have triggers. The triggers, again, can be any activity, maybe a delay, maybe a WCF receive, or any other activity. When the trigger fires, then it will look at all the shared transitions, if they're shared, or look at those transitions. We'll look at the conditions on those and decide, is one of these a match? And if so, then it will transition to that state. Now, if you have multiple tracks, right, multiple transitions where their conditions equal true, you're going to be in a runtime error state. You can't be in two states at one time in that particular scenario. What's that? Is there an else? No. On the condition, you have to kind of build the else's yourself. Yeah. So let's go. Workflow invoker dot invoke new guessing. Yeah, and we'll see if I built that all correctly. So between 1 and 100, we have to do it that way, right? 75. Oh, look at that. That's not that many guesses. I know you guys could do it faster. So we got this state machine, right? We can move through these various states and transition. We have the entry and the exit conditions. A lot of things are similar if you've used state machines in workflow 3. Some things are slightly different. That trigger mechanism takes some getting used to. But hopefully if you're familiar with the concept of a state machine, that this makes sense and works for you to model that out as your workflow there. Yes. So the question was, is there an ability to pass parameters from a transition to a state? There isn't anything where you would pass parameters, but you can use the variables for that.
Yeah,
it's the way the variables work in Workflow 4, while it's really helpful for the underlying persistence and scoping and all the stuff they do, it does make it problematic sometimes. We say, well, great, but I don't want to have 30 different variables at the workflow level just so I can pass these things. Yeah, I understand that, but they haven't yet fixed that. And I don't know if they will based on how deeply tied that is to the architecture and the scoping that they do. Any other questions about the state machine? Yes, sir. Yep. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yep. I would have to double check what state they're at in the developer preview, and I don't know I haven't heard yet what the plans are for release. So the question was about, in Workflow 3, you had the ability to use some classes to query the current state, not only find out what state it's in, but what transitions were possible. You can still do that in Workflow 4 and 5, and 4 or 5, but I don't know that it's kind of out of the box. You can just create a class and ask it. I think you may have to do a little more work. But yeah, talk to me after, and we'll get connected, and I'll make sure you get an answer for that. Yeah. One other change in 4.5. So one addition was that Designer actually makes it intuitive to add the shared trigger. The other change is now the states. Technically, a state is not an activity; it's a node, much like a decision in a flowchart. They don't actually think of it as an activity. And so in the first version of these state machines, you couldn't put a breakpoint on the state. Now in Workflow 4.5, they enable you to put breakpoints on there and have it break when you're at a particular state. All right. So the last three things are kind of big if you're into Workflow. And the first one, especially if you're into WCF. So in Workflow 4, we have the ability, as we did in 3.5 and 3, to build workflow services. All right, essentially a WCF service that's implemented as a workflow. So rather than write code and have methods with lines of code in them, I have a workflow that when you call my WCF service, activities do the work. In Workflow 4, though, the way that the WCF contract got defined was by building the workflow. It was all kind of workflow first. So I would build my workflow, and I would put WCF activities in it. I would say, okay, in this part in the workflow, I'm going to receive a message. Here's the operation name and the service contract name and the parameters. And then it would infer from my workflow the service contract. Great. Really smart that you guys figured out how to do that. Not necessarily how people wanted to do service development. Right? Lots of people wanted to have their contract just like they would with another WCF service where they'd say, here's an interface. Right? I have all these operations laid out. This is my service. Now let me go implement it as a workflow. Right? So in Workflow 4.5, we actually have two different mechanisms for working with that contract-first model. And the first one is that you can have an external contract, and you can simply associate it with your workflow and say, I implement that contract. And what that gives you is validation. Right? So when you associate a particular contract with your workflow service, it will make sure that you've all your operation signatures match and your SOAP actions and all that good stuff matches that contract so that you can have confidence that, yes, if I go host this workflow service, it matches the contract that I'm supposed to be implementing. Right? So that's one way. The second way is, rather than just validating, they'll use the contract to generate for you all those send and receive activities so that you don't have to type all that stuff in. And then you know that they're configured exactly like the contract says they should be. So if we go in here to our app, let's go find one that's built here. So I've got a workflow service here, prototypical example, right, expense reports. Two operations. You can submit a report, or the manager can come in and submit a response. So I have a service contract defined that lays that out. It's got a particular namespace. All right, it's the iExpense service. And I have two operations, submit report and submit the manager response. So I want to make sure I actually developed my this workflow service back in workflow 4. And so I wanted to create this contract and then make sure I was implementing it. So if I go back here to my workflow service, you can see I have a receive activity for submit report and its reply. So that models out the submit report operation. And I have a receive activity here for submit manager response. And eventually I have a, send the reply for that. So I think it's right. If I look at my receive activity, I can look at the properties, kind of check the service contract. I think everything's right in terms of the parameters, but I don't really know. I don't know if it matches exactly. So I'm going to go on the workflow, and on the implemented contracts property, I can add a new type. And I already have a reference to that library because I'm using some of the data contract types. I'll browse for types. There we go. So if I go to contracts, notice it lets me do that, and it's smart enough to filter out to my service contract. And nothing really seems to have changed. Oh, except for that. Don't hit save. Did I mention it was developer preview? Oh, no, the hourglass is coming up. We've outlived the lifetime. Oh, okay. Come on, hang on for 10 more minutes. All right, I think my implemented contracts may have gone away. It did. Let's try that again. We're not even to the part that failed in Belgium yesterday. So now, right, I've got the implemented contracts, and I changed the name of my operation to submit reports, which doesn't match that contract. So it explicitly calls out, drills down in through these errors, and says, hey, these things have problems. And if I look, submit reports does not exist in this contract with this particular namespace and name. Right? So it notifies me that I have an operation in my workflow that's not in the contract, that's not allowed. We can change that. Likewise, if I go out here, everything's getting slow. And change that, it's already going to tell me, right? It doesn't know about that. Well, that's a different variable there. It doesn't like those changes. I better stop taunting it. It's gonna break. So that's one thing. I can take my existing workflow, and I can implement that contract. The other thing I can do. And I'm going to do this in a separate project here. So let me go add a new project. This is the part that failed yesterday, which is why I'm doing it in a separate project. All right, so I have that. And now with this workflow service project, I have import service contract. I'm not adding a service reference. I don't want to generate proxies and do all that stuff. I'm not going to call the service, but I want to import the contract into my project. Which of course means I have to add a reference. So we'll import the contract. My expense service, hopefully this won't blow up. Down in the bottom it says it's importing the service contract. Eventually it's going to pop up and tell me, hey, I imported the service contract. You need to build in order to see the generated activities that I've created for you. So, okay, I'll build. I'll take the bait. This is where it broke last time. Build succeeded. There we go. So now I have activities over here. Submit report, send and receive. So let me get rid of that. I'll drag this on here. And notice a couple of things. One, I get the activities, they're pre-configured. They match that contract exactly in terms of the operation name, the parameters, the namespace, everything. I don't have to configure them by hand. But two, it didn't actually generate me a typed kind of encapsulated black box activity. It actually gave me this receive and this send reply so that I can come in here and add additional things in between them, or I can come in and kind of tweak the things that don't really matter to the contract itself, right? So things like can create instance. I need to say yes, that's going to be the first activity in my workflow. I need to mark it as can create instance. Right? So you need access to the individual activities, but what they generate for you is essentially a template. And when you drag that in, the template creates for you the right receive and send reply to be able to go and then implement that operation. Right? So those are the two models for the service contracts. All right. Questions on that one before I go into the last two? Yes, sir.
Yeah, I like that it tells you that your name is indirectly changing.
Mm-hmm.
Does it also offer you to refactor the contract or the other way around?
No, yeah, so the question was, great, it tells you it's wrong, but it doesn't give you the refactor support to say, okay, well then I want it the way it is in the workflow, go fix the contract. No, that's not in there yet. And I don't know if they have plans to do that by release. I would guess no, but.
I also have a question about auto-generated activities.
Mm-hmm.
In workflow 4, if you create a service reference
mm-hmm.
for auto-generated activities as well,
yep.
But they will have, the file names will be the entire namespace of that contract or method.
Yep. Yeah. So, I don't think that's fixed. The question was, in workflow 4, when you add a service reference, so when you're consuming a service and you say I want to add a service reference, it generates activities to be able to call the service. Whereas here, they're generating activities in order to implement the service. And they give it in order to make sure they're unique. They give them nice long file names with namespaces, and they're huge. And so you do run into problems with the file names and things. I don't think that they've changed the default behavior. I don't know if there's any kind of extension point either where you could fix that. I'm sure that if you asked somebody at Microsoft, they would say, well, just build your project on C and then fix it. So I don't think that piece has been fixed. And really, what those do is they make it simpler for you to call services or to implement those services. Certainly not required, as we saw. I mean, you can validate against the ones that you develop individually. But when you generate them, you're kind of stuck with what they give you. All right. So the last two things, this one, probably one that you've wanted ever since you first started working with workflow, workflow versioning. Probably should have been there in version 1. All the MVP summits and the advisors meetings and things have kind of been, several people have been harping on them about, what's missing? And they would just shake their heads and say, I know, versioning. They finally have it, workflow versioning. So now I can have multiple versions of my workflow side by side. And the way this works, the default behavior is, if you start a workflow with a particular version, you start with version 1, then you can continue to use version 1 and end with version 1, even though version 2 has been deployed. All right, so new clients, new workflows that start can use the new definition. Old workflows that are continuing can continue to use the existing definition that they were built against. And the workflow service host is actually aware of this versioning. So let me get out of here and look at our expense service. So in addition to the implemented contracts, you'll notice on the workflow service, I have a definition identity. Essentially a name, I can give it another string, it's a package, and the version. And so I can say this definition right here is version 1 of this expense service. And so we can go out and start up my client application here. And my client application is just a WPF app. All it does is it invokes the service, and it submits an expense report. Right? It has no notion of workflow or anything else. It's just a poorly designed, bad UI WPF application that I wrote to go out and call this service. There we go. So we'll put an expense report. Just think, if they didn't have date drop-downs, it would look really ugly. So we're in Den Haag from Minneapolis. So we'll submit that. Now, while that's processing, we'll pull up Notepad because I'm notorious for forgetting these numbers. I'm going to use the report ID to correlate the second message back. So with workflow services and WF4, you have this ability to do correlation, right, where I don't have to know the instance ID of the workflow, but I just need to have the workflow ID. Clearly, I should stop and restart something. Hopefully, it's just Visual Studio. So while we wait for that, what's going to happen is we're going to get back an ID, and that's my version 1 instance. That workflow then is going to be paused, waiting for the manager response, and it's going to be persisted out into the database. Now, it was built against the version 1 definition. So what I'm going to do is take the definition, I'm going to store off the version 1 in a particular place where the workflow service host can find it, and I'm going to create version 2. Then I'm going to kick off a new workflow, and that's going to pick up and run on version 2. And while that one's running, I'll be able to resume version 1. All this assumes that this actually will kick back. Okay, so 20. So version 1 equals number 20. So let's stop that. Here's what I'm going to do, hoping that this fixes the slowness problem. I'm going to shut down that instance of Visual Studio and that instance of Visual Studio. Hope that helps speed things up here. So we've got version 1. The way this works is it's convention-based. So we take this in our web app here. Under app code, we create a folder based on the name. So it's called expense service. And I'm going to copy that and paste version 1 over here. And then I'll change the file name a little bit just to make it unique. So there's our version 1. Now we're still in here. We'll go change the identity. We'll make this 2.0. And let's just go change something here. Let's see. We send out emails. Let's change that a little bit. Now I'm just making a simple change here. Oops. So we can see it. But you can change the implementation as much as you want, as long as you don't change for a workflow service, you're not changing that contract. All right, if you change the signatures of the service or you're manipulating the service, then you get into a whole different arena. This is workflow versioning, not service versioning. So let's try, whoops, probably the wrong startup app. Yeah, I think what you said was if you're changing the contract, you need to point to a different contract. You need to version the whole service, and then you would host a different XAML file. So now we're going to go out and start another workflow. So this should be going against version 2 now. So we should get a report ID of 5. That's good. So version 2 equals 5. Glad they didn't clash. So now, out there in our persistence database, we've got two instances stored with these different IDs, and one's version 1 and one is version 2. So if I come and run my manager application, oops, stop debugging. So if I run this, let's go finish off. So version 1 was 20, and we'll approve that because we assume it's going to go through. And now we have a nice email over here, because this is where everybody stores emails on their C drive, right? There's our email. It says your expense report, right, has been approved. Now notice there's no V2 in here. It's using the original definition. It pulled it off of the file system. It used the original definition and used those original activities to finish that off. And now let's see. Version 2 was number 5. So if we go finish that one off, now we should have a new email. And now we've got the V2, right? So it picked up that second bit of change and put that in there. So for workflow service hosts, it's convention-based. You change that identity, you put the old ones in that app code, and then the folder named after your service. And the workflow service host factory, actually, as it starts building things up, goes out and finds these other definitions and basically attaches them as supported versions. Now, if you're using workflow application, you're doing that yourself, you can leverage that workflow identity, that definition identity as well, and you can do the same sort of things. You can start new ones with your latest definition, and you can use the old definition when you load up the existing ones.
Just a simple question.
Yep. Okay.
I'm sure it's, as I say, I'm sorry if the definition mm-hmm. changed even without changing the version.
So you think that that particular versioning model would break?
Well, I've got long running workflows.
Yep.
In V4.
Yep.
And what if I upgrade the actual workflow to 4.5?
Uh huh. It's a good question. So if you have existing workflows in the persistent store that are WF4 and you upgrade to 4.5, I would have to validate that, but I'm pretty sure that should be supported because 4.5 essentially is going to replace the 4.0 piece bits on your machine. And so all the same types and everything else should be there. It should load in the... Yeah, the workflow definition wouldn't be there in the XAML. But when it goes to load that up, that's okay. And you don't when you create a workflow definition here, a workflow service, you don't have to provide an identity if you don't want to. So it is optional. So it should come up fine without that workflow identity. All right. So I'll show you one last thing before we wrap up. It looks like I have 2 minutes, 2.5. Dynamic update. Another feature we had in workflow 3 went away when we got to workflow 4. Kind of felt like we were going backwards. Now we're playing catch up. And essentially what dynamic update allows you to do is take that running workflow that's out in your persistent store, right, it's halfway done, and it had a particular definition. Right? Well, you get calls from the legal department or somebody that says, hey, we can't do what we're doing, right? You can't be doing that. We're not in compliance. We're going to get busted. You've got to fix this. So great, you fix it. Right? You use workflow versioning. You fix it, version 2. And you just say, all the new workflows now work the way that we're supposed to. You think that's going to be a satisfactory answer? No. Somebody's going to say, that's not good enough. It's not good enough that the new ones are using the new stuff. You have to fix the old ones that have been running for a month. Right? That's where dynamic update comes in. You can walk up to that persisted workflow, and what you want to be able to do is say, well, this is what it looked like when it was created. Here's how I want it to look now. Map it for me. Right, take that existing definition and map it over for me. And that's what dynamic update allows you to do. So I'm going to load up a very simple workflow. This is my original definition. Right? And the delay in there basically causes it to persist to the store. So I'm going to start a workflow. I get a nice unique identifier. I know that it's been started. I've gotten to the delay. It's now persisted in my persistence database. Well, now I need to make changes. So the way that works is you take the original definition and you begin an update. And if we look here, what that does is it takes that definition, and you'll see we've got some parts here. Notice write line, delay, write line. There's my original, but it's also copied that into this dynamic update original definition. I'm going to make changes, which is essentially going to impact that bottom part, but it knows, right, in the activity definition what the original was. So I can come in here and say after delay, and then I could put a new write line in here, and I can say final, and then I'll end the update. And now I've written out here this update map, and this is what I've created. I've created that map, right? If I start here at A, here's a map to get me to B. Right? And it's just using these references to those different activities in the definition. So now I can take and apply this update map. So when I apply the update, I'm going to take that map that we just saw, I'm going to load that instance from the persistent store, apply the update, and then I'm going to use the workflow application and say run that application. Now, they're write lines, so I had them store out to my demos folder here. You can see 7:45, I'm in U.S. time. Now, but you can see when it finished, it did the existing write, but also my new activities got in there. So my after delay, my final activity were in the workflow definition when I did that last run. Right, so a dynamic update allows you to change that running instance, right, and apply those changes, and it gives you a way to take the changes, the map, and save it. Right, so you as a developer can create the map and then hand it off to whoever's in charge of actually running scripts and applying these updates in production or in those environments.
Rollback
may not be possible. Test that out in development. I don't know that there's anything in the API that would allow you to reverse the map and say, well, you're here now, go back. You could certainly have an update map that was the reverse. But I don't know, honestly, if there's just a built-in function that would kind of reverse the map. But you could certainly build the reverse of the map and flip it. Yeah. All right. So that's dynamic update. The rehosted designer, again, for backwards compatibility, doesn't pick up any of the new stuff unless you opt in. But you have some additional things there where you can control the top toolbar and you can control some of the designer pieces there as well. We talked about the build time validation. And if you're working with the XAML directly, all the view state now shows up in one place instead of sprinkled throughout your workflow definition. Can the workflow designer be rehosted in Silverlight? No. Still not there in 4.5. Still only in WPF. Yep. All right. So hopefully that gave you a good sense of what's coming. As much as you can get excited about technology, hopefully that excites you about workflow 4.5. Should make authoring workflows much easier, allow you to build a lot richer workflows, a lot of improvements in there, and the big ones being versioning and dynamic update finally arriving for workflow 4. So thank you for coming. I'll stick around up front for questions, but I'm going to kind of shift aside so the next speaker can get set up. Thanks. Enjoy the rest of the day.